Hello, I'm Edwina Farley. Great to be with you for A Big Country here on RN. This week, we've got some good news for fish lovers. After a couple of very dry years, freshwater yabbies and wild-caught barramundi are back in good supply. We'll catch up with a couple of volunteer tutors lending a helping hand in the classroom in outback New South Wales. And we join a Lamington production line in northwest Victoria. The good ladies from the Cardross Progress Association are raising money to keep their community hall afloat.
And what's your job here today?
I think I'll be doing the coconut because I'm not much good at the dipping.
Really?
I put too much chocolate on, so I'm better at throwing the coconut at them.
I tell you, as one who has dared to try, the humble Lamington is a baking work of art. We will be off to Cardross a bit later. But let's start our travels today in Western Victoria, where the swamps are full and the yabbies are big and fat.
Yabbies are just fantastic animals, how they can adapt and grow so quickly when the conditions are right. If the conditions aren't right, they won't grow at all. But this year, everything lined up. Just a lot of water, a lot of food, just gone really well.
Trevor Domishans has waited a long time for this. After 2 years of crippling drought, the swamps on this Eden Hope property are full again. And the yabbies are loving it. Hello, I'm Jess Davis. Trevor is a sheep producer from Victoria's Western Wimmera district. He branched out into growing yabbies, or freshwater crayfish, back in the 1990s, when sheep and wool prices plummeted. A mate had told him these swamps would be prime yabby country.
Early 90s were a real tough time in farming. You know, we were shooting sheep and all that sort of thing, and no money in wool or lambs. And we were just lucky that yabbies come along at that time, and we did pretty well out of them the first probably 4 years. We were selling about 4 tonne a year. Getting exported all over the world.
But the good times didn't last. A series of below average rainfall years saw these natural swamps dry up and the yabby trade with them.
It went really well the first, up until about 1996 when we either had a shifting climate or it stopped raining or whatever happened. This last year is the first above average rainfall since 1992, so it's been a long time.
That's a beautiful lake you've got here.
Yeah, it's hard to leave. That's rushes or reeds you can see there. That's what we call cane grass.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a natural food of yabbies. If you went out there, you'd find they've eaten all that off down to ground level. It's just one of the natural foods they eat. So we pretty much got 5 or 6 different areas. We just try and replicate nature as much as we can, because no one's ever been able to grow yabbies better than your natural swamps. We're growing yabbies, but we're trying to conserve nature as well. As you can see, there's a lot of wildlife on our ponds. Brolgas are here every night, leave early in the morning.
How much of this have you restored and how much was already here of the natural part of it?
The actual swamp is 200 or 300 acres, and we've just banked off about 80 acres in total, but we only really yabby, 20 acres of that at a time, maybe a bit more. We just try and have a wet and dry cycle, so that one's dry now, we'd fill that next year. You can see all these plovers flying around. That's the Aboriginal name of this swamp or the whole area actually is Patcher. That's Aboriginal name for plover. And as long as I can remember, even as a kid, there's always been 40 plovers here, pretty much. Those two birds out there are musduck. They're a pretty rare duck. And we're sort of into trying to conserve some of those things. They winter down at the sea around Cape Jaffa, and they come up here to breed every year. They probably eat a lot of yabbies as well. not too worried about that. There's only, there are two young ones there. There's only three young ones and a couple of big ones here, there's actually three out there. But I'll just show you a pot. So as you can see here, the ponds are still pretty full. We haven't lost much water this year. The yabbies that we sort of have, we've got about 40 small farm dams, and we kept a lot of yabbies alive in those dams using bore water. And then we've been able to put them in our main ponds, and it's just been fantastic.
Trevor Domershens heads out into the water and pulls in one of his yabby traps. He wants to show me just how big and fat these yabbies are.
Yeah, so they're some pretty good yabbies. They're not as big as we've got in some ponds, but they're normally what we'd sell, or even a bit bigger than what we normally sell. It's just this year we've got really big yabbies for the first time for a long time. I'll show you. That one's a male. Might need them. Most of these big yabbies are all males. I'm just trying to see if we've got a female here. Might not have.
Do you eat a lot of yabbies yourself?
Not a lot. No, we eat a few. We're still reckon they're the best eating of anything. Yeah, we eat enough, but not heaps.
Trevor thinks he'll sell 1 ton of yabbies this year and is hopeful for the future.
Yeah, yabbies have been a fantastic journey for us. We grow about 4,000 fat lambs, but no one cares about that and no one ever wants to know about it. And we grow a few yabbies, and it's just something everyone wants to know about it, because they're just such a great ad for this area and everywhere. If you can grow yabbies on your farm still with modern farming techniques with sprays and chemicals and that, you're doing everything pretty right. Hopefully we get a few more wet years. You know, we might get some over here in the West Wimmera back to it. We're in a fantastic part of Victorian Australia here. We've got as many birds and wildlife as Kakadu. It's 25% of Victoria's wetlands just around here. It's just a fantastic place. I suppose one of the reasons we went into yabbies was just to conserve a bit of water and enjoy nature. I'm sort of, I guess, a conservationist, but I insist on making money out of it.
How'd you go anyway?
Yeah, pretty good. Not as good as it has been going.
Yeah, rightio. Load up a bit, or?
Yeah, weather. Rough,
it's a Friday at the port of Corumba in Queensland's Gulf of Carpentaria, and local barramundi fishermen are bringing in this week's catch. After a tough few years, they're enjoying one of the best starts to the season in ages.
My name's Alan Otto. I'm almost a local. I've only been here 19 years. Another year I'll be a local.
Rob said it was rough this last time as well. G'day, I'm Eric Barker. Most barramundi fishermen will tell you, when there's a drought at land, there's a drought at sea. And that's certainly been the case up here in Queensland's northwest. Rainfall in the Gulf Country has been at an all-time low in the past couple of years, and commercial fishermen have been doing it tough. But this year, the rains have come, the rivers have finally run, and the barramundi are back.
Been absolutely excellent so far. We haven't had a decent season for nearly 5 years because we haven't had any rain. But we've had a lot of rain this year, so it's been helpful. But I don't think it'll last because we haven't had the rain inland that we normally get. Unless we get good rain inland, it'll die.
And how's the quality of the fish you're catching?
Excellent. A little bit bigger than normal. There's a lot of food around. Very well conditioned. You know, very, very healthy, very, very heavy, which is good when you're selling by the kilo.
So, Alan, you've come off a couple of tough years for fishing, caught a few this year, but how are you going as a business at the moment?
Yeah, it's going along quite nicely, thank you. It's been a struggle for the last five, but everyone forgets that the six before that were fantastic. You know, be turning over $300,000 a year and having 4 months off is lovely. But when it all crashes and you drop down to $100,000 a year, well, that's barely break even, makes things a bit tough. Last couple of years I've worked in the off-season, you know, just to keep the business going. Operating machinery, that's my only other sort of work that I normally do.
Rob Pend is another commercial fisherman busy unloading his catch at Corumba. He's been fishing these Gulf waters for the past 16 years. And like Alan Otto, he struggled to keep going during the lean years, but he's learnt some valuable lessons along the way.
Yeah, last couple of seasons, like, the fish were in poor condition, they were lethargic, They were scarce, certainly not aggregated anywhere. There was no bait. We had the dieback of the mangroves. Everything was doom and gloom. This year the mangroves are coming back. The bird life's amazing. Everything's happy. We're happy, everyone's happy, yeah. Right from the start, the first time I put a net out, I knew it was going to be right. The first winch up on my net reel there was fantastic, and ever since then, it's just been getting better. The fish have been improving in condition week by week. They're getting bigger and fatter, healthier looking, and it's no wonder given the amount of bait that's out there.
So what did those last couple of seasons do for your business, and where has it left you now?
Well, it's taught us a lot. It's taught us a lot about not getting too excited when things are good, you know. Like when things are good, that's when you put things away for when they're bad. So even though I've been fishing for 16 years, that's the first time I've seen a run that long that was so bad. And now I've realised that, you know, when I get in front after this, I'll be putting things away ready for the next one, yeah.
One of the other big industries in the Gulf Country is tourism. Lots of keen recreational fishermen make the pilgrimage up here looking to bag a barra. The bigger the better. The drought has kept them away in recent years, but like the barra, they're now back. Yvonne Tunney runs a local tourist park and fish and chip shop. She says the year is looking good for business.
Yeah, I think at the moment it's a positive feeling for the year ahead. There's certainly reports from the commercial side that it's been a good start, and they're seeing good catches at the moment. And they're saying the barra are actually full of little prawn, which is excellent for the future of the prawn season as well. Recreationally, the guys are probably having a little less luck, but I think that's, as they said from the commercial side, they're full of prawn, so they're not terribly hungry, so they're not interested in eating your bait or your lures there. But yeah, there's certainly some being caught, but just the recreationally probably not as much.
And have you noticed a few of your regular recreational fishermen coming back?
Oh, absolutely, yes. We've got some groups that come every year, and a couple of those groups were a lot larger this year. They brought some other friends along with them, so they've had a good time, so hopefully they'll be back next year as well. And as I said, they all caught really good fish. Probably the barramundi were just not as high in the catch numbers, but they all recognised that was because they're full of prawn and they're simply not hungry, but they're all out there.
And as a fish and chip shop owner, what does a barramundi full of prawns taste like?
Well, I don't think we cook it full of prawns, but certainly that means that they're very healthy. They come through and they've got a lovely layer. Like, you don't associate fat with fish, but you actually do get that layer of oil in the flesh, and it just makes it absolutely super delicious to cook up.
Corumba Fish and Chip Shop owner Yvonne Tunney ending that report on the barra season in northwest Queensland from Eric Barker. Good to hear the season's finally off to a good start. Still to come on A Big Country Today, we're baking up a storm to keep a country hall afloat, and volunteers lending a helping hand in the classroom in outback New South Wales.
9-year-old Clay Dermer is practicing his timetables, bouncing up and down on a pogo stick. It's one way to get his homework done on remote Bull Kamata Station, a bush heritage conservation reserve 100 kilometres west of Broken Hill in the far west of New South Wales. Now, is this the way you learn your times table?
Yeah, one of them.
And how are you going learning your times table? What are you up to?
I'm up to fours and sixes.
Well, that's pretty good. Do you think by jumping up and down it's helping you learn?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Hello, I'm Cherie von Hirschner. Clay's also learning his times table with the help of Gary and Marco Saunders. They're volunteers with the Isolated Students Education Scheme, a program which offers in-home help to parents whose children are studying via School of the Year and distance education. At Bull Kamata, they're supervising 6-year-old Xavier, 9-year-old Clay, and 11-year-old Asher with their schoolwork.
We've come out to Bull Kamata Station this time. Pretty much chose that because of the fact that it's a bush heritage, so it's a conservation park. So we're out here to learn as well about our country, and the fact that there were three children. So being Margot and myself, yeah, we've got an opportunity to be able to look after the three children.
So for you, have you had much experience on outback stations teaching kids?
Well, outback stations, both Margot and I come from farming backgrounds. Our families were farmers, so we sort of understand the rural sort of environment. We have been out back travelling for probably over the last 4 years. We've been out a fair bit. So this is our third placement. So we've had one in Queensland on a cattle and cropping station. We did one on a sheep and goat and cattle property up in northwest New South Wales. So we've been out to a few of the outback stations.
My name's Xavier. I'm writing.
You're writing? And what are you writing?
A book.
A book? What kind of book?
A whale book.
And will you be doing some drawing as well?
Mm-hmm.
Margot Sanders is no stranger to the schoolroom, and she's enjoying the challenge of teaching younger students.
I did secondary teaching and I taught food technology and hospitality, so quite different than teaching the students here because they're all primary school. We actually really enjoy that though because it is something different and just getting back to basics, and it's really exciting seeing them learn and develop while we're here.
Now, Gary was saying that you brought up your children on a property. You must then understand the importance of some extra help for the mums and dads.
Absolutely we do, and once you get out here you can see that this service really is needed because, you know, the mums are generally the tutors out here. So they're trying to run a household, they're trying to run a station, or help out with the station depending on whether it's shearing time or harvesting, or in the case out here, wanting to be involved in the conservation part of it. So they've got to do all of that as well as fit in their teaching. So yeah, we can certainly see there's a big opportunity for people to come out and help out, and it is needed.
And what about for you, Gary? How easy has it been for you to adjust?
Actually, well, probably more interesting for me because I'm not actually a trained teacher. I have worked in the school environment as integration aid and sports coordinator, and so my background is probably fairly much sports. So I've done a lot of coaching of junior teams, different levels, club representative, and so on, state levels. So you try and combine all those pieces of expertise, I suppose, and then bring it and try and work out what's best for the students you're working with. So it's challenging, but the lessons are all prepared, so it's just a matter of trying to make it interesting and the big buzzword, engaging, for the students to be able to get them keen to sit down and actually have a try at whatever the topic is for that session.
Hi, I'm Asha. I just turned 11. Out here there's heaps of land. I'm learning how to drive a car. And I've learnt how to drive a motorbike since we've got here.
So what are you studying today with Gary and Margot?
Today I've been finishing off a few things and sending some science recounts to my teacher. I've been helping my little brother Xavier with his maths work and his writing.
Gary and Margot Sanders don't confine themselves just to the schoolroom to run the lessons. They also use Bulkamata's natural environment as a teaching tool.
We went out the other day, actually, and while we were just walking around with one of the students, we just did spelling. So just as we saw things, and it might be just tree or fence or, road or whatever. So we're just doing spelling as we're just walking along. And then we got to a math sort of a thing, and we just got some rocks. Actually, we made some actually words out of rocks, just little stones on the track. And then we got a stick and we started pencil drawing things on the track. So yeah, you use whatever medium is available at the time, and it gets back to that engaging, whatever makes the child interested enough to want to learn. So no, it's been fun.
Well, this morning we make about 60 dozen lamingtons and jelly cakes. It's one of the major fundraisers for our public hall out here in Cardross.
The smell of freshly baked sponge cake, cocoa and coconut, the essential ingredients for the Australian lamington. Hello, I'm Sally Dacus. I'm in the kitchen of the Cardross Hall, the hub of this small grape-growing community in northwest Victoria. Once a month for the past 10 years, the ladies of the Cardross Progress Association have donned their aprons, ready to make 60 dozen lamingtons to sell at a nearby community market. They're raising money to keep this hall going.
Well, this morning in here we've got Maureen and Val, Mary,
Hi, Maureen, Val.
Margaret and Bronwyn, and a little later in the morning there'll be two or three others that come along when they've sort of fixed up their morning commitments.
Diadella Santa is directing this production line. She's armed with what looks like a giant ruler. It's her special cutting guide to make sure the lamingtons are the correct size.
We're a well-oiled operation here. It all goes very smoothly. I'm up this far end of this wonderful big stainless steel bench that we have in our kitchen here. I cut the cake to the shape of the lamingtons required, and then they get dipped in chocolate dip, or over in the fridge we've got two huge tubs of jelly, just getting it to the stage where we can use it as a dip. Then they're rolled in coconut. We take them out into the hall, the main hall, where they're dried, and they're packed in small boxes of half dozens to sell to our ever-growing lot of customers.
Now, I'm going to go and talk to some of the ladies, Di. I'll leave you to cut up your sponges. So what's your job here? Hello.
Hello, my name's Bronwyn and I'm fairly new to the organisation, have just retired and thought I'd come down and help with the Cardross Association.
What's the prompt to join a group like this? It's a friendly group.
Yes, a very friendly group, and I lived in Cardross for a long time before moving into Redcliffs, and with work commitments didn't have time to help at that stage, but now I'm free, I can.
And what's your job here today?
I think I'll be doing the coconut, because I'm not much good at the dipping.
Really?
I put too much chocolate on, so I'm better at throwing the coconut at them.
Lovely. It's obviously a fine, fine art, the dipping process. We've got a few more ladies that have just arrived. The teams are swelling. We've got Di's sister, Julie, who's arrived. And Margaret, hello, what's your job here today?
Yeah, I'm going to just dip the cakes.
Oh, you're the dipper?
Well, or the coconutter, one or the other.
Now, I've heard that the dipping in the jelly is quite tricky, is that right?
Yes.
So what's the art? You can't let the sponge in for too long?
No, not in the jelly. No, it's got to be just dipped in each side, one side, and that side, next on the bottom, and then just put them onto the trays.
Now, it's not just lamingtons that come off this production line. The ladies of the Cardross Progress Association also produce an array of scones, biscuits, jellies and preserves to sell at their market stall.
Di, what's been the sum total of your efforts over the decade?
Oh, not over the decade, but I can state that we average about $550 profit each month. But not only do we sell the lamingtons, we also sell freshly made scones and passion fruit filled yo-yo biscuits, and quite a few preserves, jams and pickles as well. So our stall is very interesting, but we've found all of those things help us raise the much needed money that we need to keep improving this wonderful almost 80 year old facility. It is a publicly owned hall, and they're few and far between. Being custodians of this public hall means that we are responsible for the insurance, and the insurance policy is around about $5,000 a year on this building, its contents, and these volunteers here today.
Gosh, that's a lot of money to run.
It is a lot of money, and you cannot actually get any assistance grant-wise or anything. So off the top of everything we do with our lamingtons, we need to cover that $5,000 for insurance. And look, lots of ideas get born here in this kitchen once a month, like new things to do for the hall, projects that we can look into. It's a lovely social side. There's a little bit of chit-chat, a bit of gossip and a bit of, oh, I didn't know that, but they all come out a little bit later on. So, but it's great. It's really great.
And I bet there's some good gossip on that Lamington production line. It is Life and the Universe at a communal cooking event. Diadella Santa from the Cardross Progress Association, ending that story from Sally Dacus. Now, if podcasts are more your thing, or you find it hard to listen in at this time, don't forget you can join us anytime via the ABC Radio Player app. Just search for A Big Country. That's it for this week. Thanks to Tim Simons for technical production. Some great listening ahead here on RN.